With summer closing in, I am so ready to ditch my cold weather clothes and say hello to shorts and tees. But I don't want to just buy what's trendy. I want to update timeless, high-quality summer pieces that I can utilize for all seasons and years to come without spending a fortune. And now I've got a lineup of beautiful clothes from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year.
Like premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30. I'm talking about, babe.
There's washable silk tops, 14 karat gold jewelry, and so much more. And the best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. It's actually because they partner directly with top factories, so Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. I actually just ordered their linen shorts, tops, and pants that I plan to wear for this summer because they're lightweight, and I'm so excited to get them and start planning my Quince capsule wardrobe for my summer travels. Honestly, I have so much Quince clothing, and I love it all.
Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/husband for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince. .com/husband to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/husband.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to our podcast. This is Murder with My Husband. I'm Peyton Moreland.
And I'm Garrett Moreland.
And he's the husband.
And I'm the husband.
Garrett, what's your 10 seconds today?
My 10 seconds today is that I've recently been trying to figure out how to fix things around the house a little more. So I did. It's not that funny. With some help, I installed the light in the room that we're currently recording the podcast in. So if anybody needs an electrician, do not call me and call somebody else.
There you go. Okay. Our case sources today are tributearchive.com, ljworld.com, cjohnline.com, and also a TV show that I've never even heard of. It's called Solved: Extreme Forensics. So it's an episode on that. Never heard of it. Thought it was pretty good. Our case was suggested in by Summer Arazia on Instagram. So thank you, Summer, for sending this in. The date is January 5th, 2007. It's a Friday in the small town of Arkansas City, Kansas. So not Arkansas. Arkansas City, Kansas.
Okay.
Arkansas City has about 12,000 people in it, and it is near the border of Oklahoma. Jody Sanderholm is a 19-year-old college student attending Cowley College. She lives at home with her parents, as the college is just on the other side of town. She's smart. She was valedictorian of her high school class. She has a lot of friends, she's outgoing, and she enjoys to dance. She's a member of the Cowley College dance team who go by the name of the Tigerettes, which is very common for collegiate dance teams to do. The dance team at the college is going to be similar to an NBA or an NFL cheer team, which is actually a dance team. They perform at cheer and sporting events. They don't stunt or throw girls in the air like competitive cheerleaders, but they do compete at the end of the year at a nationals, which is a lot of time what college dance teams do.
Yeah.
And I'm only saying this because I was on a college dance team, so I'm going to put some respect on the college dance team. I'm proud of this girl. We've talked about that before, so I kind of relate to Jody in a way. I know how organized and planned out the days are when you are on a college dance team or any college sport in general, honestly. You wake up, you go to practice, you go to class, you go to some more practice, and then you do a game or an event and you go home. Jody's life was also predictable because of her routine. After practice in the morning, she would go home and get her mail, drop it off on the kitchen counter, grab her lunch, take a shower, etc. It was kind of the same thing every day. On this particular Friday, January 5th, Jody's mom, Cindy, who usually always calls her around lunchtime to check in, makes her call. No one answers. Thinking her daughter, Jody, might just still be in the shower, she waits 5 more minutes and calls again, but to no avail. Around this time, Jody's sister, Jennifer, who is pregnant and expecting to deliver any day, also tries to contact her, but Jody is not answering anybody. Jennifer and Cindy begin to worry. Jody was expecting Jennifer to go into labor any day and wouldn't just ignore her phone calls. Brian Sanderholm, Jody's dad, reassures the family that everything is fine and they would probably all just laugh about it in a couple hours when they figure out what's going on. Cindy, trying but failing to believe her husband, decides to leave work early and go home to check on her daughter, Jody. Which, to me, this kind of means that they must check in regularly every day.
So I was going
to
say that it seems like a lot of stories that we do like this, there is a certain time that they always call their mom or their dad or their friends. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting.
Like, especially for me, I rely on a schedule. I love consistency, which is also predictable. And so it is that, well, at this time every day, I just call the same person because that's when I check in.
Yeah.
She rushes home only to pull up and find that Jody's car is not outside.
Oh.
There is no Mel on the kitchen counter and there is no Jody in the house. Cindy calls Jody's friends from dance team. They all say that they haven't seen her since practice ended, but if they do find her, she's in trouble because she didn't show up for a meeting for team 3 hours after practice that day. Cindy knows something is seriously wrong. And when Brian arrives home from work, the Sanderholms call the Arkansas City Police Department to report their 19-year-old daughter, Jody, missing.
And so when they called them, did they actually investigate the case? Or was it another one where they said, well, she's 19, she's on her own, blah, blah, blah.
Totally. So they actually investigate because the town is so small. Sean Wallace, who is the police chief at the time, his son actually graduated with Jody.
Oh, so he knows her.
So, I mean, that is a kind of a benefit of a small town is if you know somebody, you know somebody. And so they took it seriously from the get-go.
I'm sure as well they thought, well, how is somebody missing? This is such a small town.
Exactly. 12,000 people.
Like, oh, that's it?
So small. Yeah.
Holy crap.
He dispatches an officer to the family home who asks all kinds of questions about Jody. They discover that Jody has a boyfriend named David Merringer, who is out of town visiting family in Dallas, Texas. Police get a hold of David in Texas, who claims that he hasn't seen or heard from Jody since the day before. He agrees to come home immediately to help look for her. At this point, Lieutenant Mark McCaslin joins in the investigation for the missing Jody. By that night, a full-on search conducted by police is going on around the whole town. Every ditch, every alleyway, everywhere is searched, but no evidence is found.
Okay, so what year are we in again?
2007.
Okay, so not many security cameras, obviously, and everything.
Not many.
Okay.
Police then turn to the dance team. Maybe the girls know something more about Jody. When asked if they saw anyone suspicious that day, her teammates tell investigators about a man named Justin Thurber who, quote, was a little creepy. Seems as if he would hang around the dance team, watch their practices, hang out in the parking lot when practice was over, a kind of groupie, of the dance team, so to say. He didn't really ever talk to him, but everyone on the dance team, it was like an inside known thing that this guy was creepy and hung around them. So that's who they say.
Do you know how big the college is?
A community college.
Oh, so it's not a university, it's a community college.
Mm-hmm. He was a petty criminal around town, this Justin guy. But just that, petty crimes, abduction, not on the list. So cops already kind of knew who this guy was when they brought up his name. It's now 10 p.m. and no one has heard from Jody Sanderholm or found her black Dodge Stratus car. Searches continue as police head to Justin's parents' home where he currently lives as well. So he lives at his parents' home too. Justin claims that he and his friends were taking a road trip that day when their car veered off the road near the Cowley County State Fishing Lake where it became stuck in mud. His dad had to come pick him up after he walked away from the scene, separating from his friends, finding service, and calling him. He was all muddy, and his dad picked him up and took him home.
Okay.
Jody's father calls the TV stations around 2 to 3 a.m. that night after waiting up, and finally just losing it. So think about this. His daughter's missing all day. They've called the cops. The searches are going. They've talked to the dance team. They went and talked to Justin, who says, oh, I was going on a road trip. My dad came and picked me up. It's now nighttime, and her dad is still just sitting up, just waiting. And so finally, it hits 2 to 3 a.m., and he just calls the police stations and asks them to air a segment the next morning about Jody's disappearance because he doesn't know what else to do.
And he can't sleep. That is so heartbreaking. I seriously can't imagine the feeling of losing.
I can't.
We don't have any kids.
Yeah.
But when we do, I just can't imagine the feeling of
I know.
Of losing a kid. That's it's just horrible.
And it's almost something like that I can't even comprehend.
Yes, exactly. We can't because we don't have our own kids. Totally.
Special Agent David DeLetti with the Kansas Bureau of Investigation just so happens to catch the morning report of the missing girl on TV the next day and calls in his assistance.
Wow.
The chief, lieutenant, and special agent get together, bring in the three friends who Justin says he was with that night. Because remember, he said it was me and my friends going on the road trip. All three of them deny that they were with Justin that night, just the night before, upset that he had even dropped their name to the police. Justin had completely lied to investigators about his whereabouts and his alibi for that night. Searches continue on, but nothing comes of it. It's now the next day, and Jody has been missing for more than 24 hours. The entire town is on edge, and the entire police department is working the case.
I'm going to be a little upset if it was Justin, because that just sucks, because he was already stalking the team and all this stuff.
I know. Police bring in Justin's ex-girlfriend, because right now, they've cleared the friends that he said was with him. They've cleared the boyfriend. And so Justin's really the only guy left that they even have a lead on at all.
And there's only 12,000 people in this town. So unless someone driving through just out of nowhere was
happened
like,
to do it.
Exactly.
So they bring in Justin's ex-girlfriend trying to learn more about him. She shows police a small boat dock near where Justin had called his dad from that night. This boat dock was supposedly a place that Justin liked to go a lot. He had even told her once that if he dropped a body off that specific dock, it would never be found. They bring her in and they're like, can you tell us a little bit about him? And she's like, well, he really likes this area, this wildlife area, and this specific boat dock. He likes to go there a lot. And he even told me one time, like, now that it's a missing girl, he even told me one time if he dropped a body off this, it would never be found.
Like in a, just like a normal way or?
Yeah, like just in a casual conversation. That? Yeah, no, it said it was just a casual conversation. He just like casually mentioned it one time. Just like,
oh, if I dropped a body, what the heck?
Yeah. This area by the dock is called the Kaw Wildlife Area, and it is thousands of acres. Police begin searching the area. While searching the area, police also head back to Crawley College in order to search the last known whereabouts of Jody. She had parked her car in front of the auditorium on the morning of the 5th, around 10 a.m., and according to the evidence, or lack thereof, she never made it home, meaning this might have been the last place she's known to be. Investigators discover that there is a security footage camera around the area and request it from the college. So you kind of brought it up. It might not be all over town, but at the college at this time, they did have cameras.
I'm also surprised they haven't found her car yet.
Mm-hmm. So they haven't found her or her car.
Because it's not that big of a town and a car is not the smallest thing.
So what I'm guessing is people-wise, it's not that big, but there were thousands of acres of wildlife in this town.
Okay.
So I'm guessing that it's kind of more just rural. So there might be a lot of land that she could be at. Does that make sense?
And he could have parked a car anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Investigators begin dissecting the footage. And when they do, they see Jody pulling into the school that morning and a blue Cadillac that matches Justin's car pulls in right after hers on the security camera footage.
Wait, I have a question. Why didn't they try to get this footage earlier?
Well, we're only on day two.
Oh, okay.
So a lot has gone on, I will talk about that later, how amazingly fast these people went to try to find her, but we are only on day two. So when they see this footage, they discover that this isn't the only time that this happens on the tapes. Police notice on several different occasions, Justin was driving around the community college, going into the same parking lot around the time that the dance team was there. The problem is there is no body and not enough evidence to make an arrest. Police will have to find more evidence before they even try to confront Justin. Justin was actually out on bond at this time for petty crimes, but the bondsman decides to revoke Justin's bond, which in turn means that police can now pick him up and take him in when before they couldn't because they didn't have enough evidence. And I figured out that the detective kind of said that he thinks the bondsman did this because when he found out that he was a suspect in a missing girl, if he did do it, there was no way he was going to get the money. So he was like, I'm revoking the bond.
Oh, okay.
Police stop Justin on the way home from a bingo game with his mother and sister in the car. While Justin is taken into custody, another team is searching the Thurber's family house, during which Justin's father says that he did in fact pick up his son the night of the disappearance out by the lake because he had been deserted there with his friends. He claims that when they got home, Justin threw all of his clothes in the washer and his dad had even helped him wash off his muddy shoes with the hose. So his dad was like, yeah, we got home and his clothes were all muddy. So he threw them immediately in the washer and had me wash his shoes outside with the hose.
I mean, that seems a little unnormal to me. When I get home, I feel like I could be totally wrong, but yeah. I feel like I don't just throw my clothes immediately.
And maybe if they were like especially muddy, I would.
Yeah.
But also he's older. And so I think it's weird that the dad was like helping him like, oh yeah, take your clothes off. Let's get them in the washer. I'll take your shoes out and I'll wash them off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Police seize all of the clothes, his blue Cadillac, and Justin's cell phone. Sunday, January 7th, so this is kind of where I'm saying it's only Sunday, and all of this has already taken place. Like, they are...
That's so crazy.
And the funny thing is I hate watching CSI Miami because they start the show in clothes, right? And then at the end of the day, they're in the same clothes because they pretend all of the DNA testing and all of everything that happened in one day. They opened and closed a case in one day. And it drives me nuts. But we're literally only on day 3 and they are already collecting this guy's clothes. Like, it's insane.
That's so good though.
It is. All right, you guys, this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. And I don't know about you, but when I've been hanging out a lot, going out with friends, dinners, maybe my social battery completely drains and I need to take a few days to have a breather. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need some time alone. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I'm a huge believer in therapy. And even if you're like, I just don't feel like I have much to talk about, I don't feel like I have all this trauma, you don't realize how much your body holds on to with stress and just unhappy emotions. It holds on to it. So it's nice to let it out and get it out. Keep your life in order, and that is something therapy can do for you.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/husband today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/husband.
All right, you guys, Audible is your one-stop app for all things audio entertainment, from bestsellers and the latest releases to celebrity memoirs and gripping mysteries. Audible's library is brimming with countless genres to love and new discoveries to make. Dive into an unparalleled selection of audiobooks and explore exclusive Audible originals brought to life by top celebrities, renowned experts, and fresh voices.
As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Plus, you can enjoy unlimited access to a growing selection of audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts such as Murder With My Husband.
Honestly, I love Audible because I will get into a story while I'm cleaning or driving. Sometimes I get so hooked listening to a story, I just end up finding new places to clean or just end up sitting in my car, which drives Garrett nuts, but I'm out there sitting there.
New members can explore Audible free for 30 days. Also, this March through May, let Audible sweep you into a realm of intrigue and suspense with their mystery and thriller collection, featuring exclusive new thrillers from their best-selling authors. Their selection is designed to captivate and surprise, ensuring your heart rate remains as elevated as your imagination.
New members can try Audible for free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MWMH or text MWMH to 500-500. That's audible.com/MWMH or text MWMH to 500-500.
We're jumping into an ad right now, and I've had this question. I think about it all the time because I hate getting sick. Do you ever wonder why some people just don't get sick? One of the reasons you can help yourself from getting sick is Armra colostrum.
Okay, obviously, I had no idea that colostrum is the first nutrition we receive in life and is an exclusive source of all the essential nutrients we need in order to thrive. So what's amazing is Armra Colostrum is a proprietary concentrate of bovine colostrum that harnesses over 400 functional nutrients to strengthen your immune barriers, your body's inside suit of armor, and the first line of defense against harmful particles from the environment that can trigger inflammation and actually make you sick.
I'm not saying that it 100% works for everybody, because obviously you never know, but all I'm saying is I haven't been sick since I started taking it.
Well, and the science behind it is so cool. Armra Colostrum strengthens all four layers of your gut wall, where 80% of your immune cells are housed, and it's a rich, exclusive source of antibodies that optimize your immune defense during cold and flu season.
Plus, in clinical trials, bovine colostrum was found to be at least 3 times more effective than the flu vaccine at preventing the flu. We've worked out a special offer for our audience. Receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmra.com/husband or enter husband to get 15% off your first order. Again, that's tryarmra.com/husband.
So Sunday, detectives continue to search the 4,000 acres of the wildlife area. Meanwhile, Justin is denying the crap out of everything in his police interviews. He will not confess to anything. CSI examine the cell phone, sneakers, and clothes that was collected from Justin's family's house and find nothing that they can use. They move on to Justin's car and seem to find no evidence there either. Bummed out, they try a new approach. They go back to the Sanderholm's residence, Jody's family, and search the surrounding area. This is when they discover a lone footprint in the mud across from Jody's house near her mailbox.
No way. I would never have thought to do this.
Me either.
If I didn't find any evidence in the car or his clothes.
Especially day three. I wouldn't already be like, okay, now let's go on to plan D. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they're just moving so fast.
Wow.
Understanding that this shoe print could literally lead them nowhere, they cast it anyways and take it in. Investigators check the shoe print and compare it to Justin's collected sneakers and think that it's a match. Visibly, it looks like a match. Justin had stood outside of Jody's house recently. A tracking team is sent back out to the wildlife area near where Justin had been picked up that night by his dad, and they find more shoe impressions in mud that visibly looks like a match to Justin's as well. They begin expertly tracking the shoe print through the wildlife area and stumble upon what looks to be another set of shoe prints that is noticeably smaller. It looks as if it was a flip-flop shoe print, which is what Jody was reported to have been wearing the day she went missing. Her dance team friends said she left wearing flip-flops. So here's the thing. The police didn't notice these tracks because they brought in an expert tracking team who is able, like our trackers, who go through and find a shoe print, and it tells them what direction to go next, and then they find another one, and then they find another one.
I think it's kind of creepy that there was a shoe print so close to the house.
Mm-hmm. And right? Now far away in the wildlife area where he was picked up.
Yeah.
Exactly. They track the prints all the way down to an area near the river, but still no Jody is found. They end up finding over 70 shoe prints in the area that visibly match Justin's shoes. And on their way back at the end of the day, they decide to pull off and quickly search the area that Justin's dad had picked him up that night once again. So they finish tracking all the shoe prints. And then as they're driving back, like they're like, okay, night's over. We haven't found much. We're going to head back. They end up passing the area where Justin said his dad picked him up. And they go, okay, let's just pull off and search it again one more time. Let's see if we can find anything here.
It's got to be so frustrating for authorities because they know if they don't find any concrete evidence, like this case is dead.
Dead. Yes. There was a restroom area nearby where the tracking team notices dirt transfer on the pavement, which cops would have never noticed. So they're like looking at the ground and they notice that there's some loose dirt, meaning that it was carried in by shoes. They head into the women's bathroom, following the dirt transfer into a stall where they abruptly stop. In the basin of the toilet.
No.
Well, it's not that bad.
Okay.
In the basin of the toilet. Oh, see, guys, he's heard way too many of these stories. He's preparing for the worst.
I know.
The bottom of the toilet was someone's mail. Like, it's not toilet paper or anything. They look down and it's like mail.
Oh, but her mail was missing.
Yes. They look closer and confirm that it was Brian and Cindy Sanderholm's Mel, Jody's parents, that was thrown inside the bottom of this toilet in the wildlife area where Justin was picked up by his dad the same day that she went missing.
Holy crap. So I know we're going to get more into it, but his dad has to be involved. Has to be. I mean, I would assume so, but really? I guess we'll see. I would think so.
Okay, I'm interested. Let's keep going.
You're interested?
I'm interested in that call.
Okay.
So this team calls law enforcement because they're obviously not law enforcement, who send out a CSI team to examine the area. They dig through the rest of the toilets and find a blue flip-flop and a red Crowley College Tigerette jacket.
Oh, man.
They dig deeper into the toilets. And these are kind of like the toilets that don't flush. It's just like a really deep hole.
So it's like a porta potty.
Yes. So okay. They're just digging crap out of these toilets. Ugh. They find Jody's wallet, her dance shoes, and even her car floor mat in those toilets in the restroom. Even with all of this evidence, police know that they should not prosecute without a body. The search for Jody has turned into the recovery for her body, and everyone kind of knows it. Police contact a search and rescue organization and ask if they can help in the search of the water because they believe that's where Jody's car is. This search team gets into the water with a high-tech sonar scanning system, and as like almost immediately after they pull out in their boat, they find Jody's car in the water. Like it wasn't,
wow,
it was just
so
like
cool.
Driven into the water.
I think it's crazy that in 2007, we've had this type of technology.
Exactly.
And now 13 exactly. years later, I can't even imagine what we have now.
I'm going to throw in this little tidbit that the guy who ran the, because they had to ask like a special search and rescue team to come do this. They didn't do it themselves. And the guy who ran it, his own daughter had been abducted and murdered before.
Whoa.
And so then he got into this as a volunteer search and rescue to help when it's needed. And then he found her car.
Good for him. That's so awesome.
Yeah. While all of this is happening, footwear examiners are brought in to fully examine all of the prints that were found, and they positively ID both the shoe prints to Justin and Jody. And while that is happening, a fingerprint is being lifted from the male found in the toilet that is a match to Jody's, which tells investigators that she had in fact made it from the school to her house that day, picked up the male, but never made it inside to set it down on her kitchen counter, which is why his shoe print is at her mailbox because he followed
her. No way. So she was almost home.
Yes. He followed her from her college dance practice to her house. She gets out of her car to get her mail and he attacks her.
No way.
Yes.
That makes me so mad. She was home. I mean, she was in the driveway.
Well, yeah. Well, it was like across. So her mailbox was like across the street from her driveway. Okay. So she would like pull her car up to the mailbox and then turn into her.
Gosh, dang it. That sucks.
And while that is all happening, a different set of investigators continue to search the wildlife area where one of them finally tells the others that he's found her. Jody's hand was sticking out of some branches not far off the path. Lieutenant McCaslin approaches the body and calls the police force to deliver the news. Jody was nude, covered in bruises, and police quickly process and remove her in order to give some respect. Investigators begin lifting hairs and fibers from Jody's recovered car. Out of all of the evidence collected from the car, one arm hair was tested and matched back to Justin Thurber's. So they get this car that's been sitting in the water for 4 days. It's recovered after 4 days. They collect hairs, fibers. I mean, imagine what's in this car. They test all of it. They find one arm hair, test it against Justin, and it matches.
I don't know if any of our listeners are authorities, but that's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Like, it's just straight mind-blowing.
The ME determines that the cause of death was strangulation and blunt force trauma. She was sexually assaulted and Justin's skin was found underneath her fingernails, which means she fought back, obviously.
Ugh.
Okay, if you're like me, you probably care about eating healthy. I feel like we've all tried a million different ways to do that, but
McDonald's. Nah, just kidding.
But honestly, it became a no-brainer when I got my first Hungry Root delivery, and I have to tell you, I ordered Hungry Root.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then a week later, they reached out wanting to be a sponsor of the show. And I was like, good to go, because I already went on and ordered Hungry Root.
We seriously loved it. Before we were even sponsored and Peyton ordered it just because she wanted to try it, it was so cool. Like, it came in this box. There's all these different foods and they're healthy. They're good for you. There's snacks, stuff to make dinner recipes. It was amazing. The very first night we got it, we made our dinner and we both loved it.
Well, and it's really easy. You actually just take a short quiz and Hungry Root will get to know your personal health goals. And then they'll build you a personalized cart with all your grocery needs for the week and give you delicious recipe recommendations. So honestly, I can just go and pick a recipe, boom, puts all of it in my cart. It's crazy.
Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients.
So right now, Hungry Root is offering Murder With My Husband listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/husband to get 40% off your first delivery and your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/husband. Don't forget to use our link so they know that we sent you. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations.
Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. So, I speak a little bit of Spanish. Okay, that's not true. I speak Spanish fluently for the most part. And Peyton has always wanted to learn a language, so she's actually started using Babbel, and she's going to use it the next time we go to Mexico, and I'm really excited to see how her Spanish is.
Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/husband. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/husband, spelled BABBEL.com/husband. Rules and restrictions may apply. Okay, imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. I have definitely learned as I've gotten older that fast fashion is just not it. High quality, versatile items that will last a lifetime are the only way to go. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14 karat gold jewelry.
The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I have their silk skirt. It's washable. It's literally one of my favorites, and I wear it all the time. So indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/husband for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/husband to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/husband.
The analysis of Justin's phone pings is finally sent over, and his phone was pinging around the wildlife area that day. Justin followed Jody home from practice that day, and when she parked to get her mail, like she did every day, Justin attacked her. He pushed her back into her own car and drove her out to the Kaw Wildlife Area. He did what he did, which you guys can look up for more detail. It's definitely gruesome. I'm not going into that here. He then disposed of her body and her car, threw some of her stuff into the restroom, where he then called his dad to pick him up, told him a lie that him and his friends had been stranded or, according to you, had him help.
Oh, I feel bad now. I was completely wrong.
Well, the police could be thinking that, you know what I'm saying? I mean, there's no evidence of it, but that didn't even cross my mind. But now that I'm like, he went home and helped him, I could totally see why that would cross your mind.
I guess I'm still a true crime noob.
And then after his dad picked him up the next day, he went and played bingo with his mom and sister.
So he just lied. He completely just lied to his dad. Yeah. Then.
And then it just boggles my mind that they just go on. Like, I'm going to go play bingo. Can you imagine him playing bingo after just doing that?
I guess I assume because there has been cases where parents help the
Yeah.
Help the kids, I assume. Well, maybe he just told his dad and his dad's like, all right, let's
Completely. Completely. Yeah. And we do know that it is hard for parents to, like, you know, it is hard. Could you imagine? You can't even imagine.
Also, me like jumping to conclusions like that goes to show you how many times in cases people probably jump to conclusions, right? And blame people before
we even know. Well, and the thing is, you didn't have the full evidence, obviously. I knew the outcome of the story before I started reading the story. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Justin is brought to trial on February 2nd, 2009. So 2 years after, there was like a whole bunch of delays like we always see. But he has no chance of getting out of this one. All kinds of evidence is out there to put him away.
Good.
The jury deliberates for only 3.5 hours after a 7-day trial before coming back with a guilty verdict of capital murder. On March 20th, 2009, Justin Thurber is sentenced to death by lethal injection for the rape and murder of Jody. Because of this, he sits now in a cell for 23 hours a day, getting out for only 1 hour by himself because he can't be near people because he's on death row, and he's just awaiting his sentence.
I didn't know that about death row.
It's not like that everywhere.
Okay.
This is just in the prison that he's in is that way.
Is it a state law or is it a prison law? You're not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that one because I do know that there's places where death row inmates can interact with other people. But the detective specifically said that he is in lockdown 23 hours a day, gets out with a guard by himself, doesn't get to interact with
people. I'm glad he got caught. That's just absolutely horrible.
And especially with the gruesome details of the case, you know, you can look up if you want. It was just horrific. Completely uncalled. Like, I can't even wrap my mind around it.
I said this 10 minutes in, I was going to be so pissed if it was him because he was already stalking all of them. Like, that sucks. Sucks is a bad word to use. It's just horrible. Like,
You're just reading my notes line for line right now. I literally said that it was an extremely violent case and that immediately Jody's team knew off the bat that Justin was a creep who stalked them. And that was the first person they said. And if you remember, they said he's a little creepy because they thought he was harmless. Mm-hmm. Just a harmless weirdo who just looks at us.
Well, and I was going to say that too. But he was doing petty crimes, right?
Yeah.
So to jump from petty crimes to something like that seems super drastic.
Yeah. To torture and kill somebody.
That just seems very, very drastic.
Yeah. Jody's Law was created after all of this, which allows for police departments to get involved earlier in stalking cases, which I think is great because, like I said, they truly just thought he was an innocent groupie who was a little creepy and liked to watch them. But he was literally planning out a murder for one of the girls. It's so scary. I watched the videos of Jody cheering at the games, you know, which is like what I did. And my heart just breaks for her and her family because these stories are about real people. And I truly hope that Jody knows that the love that we have for her.
So I was just going to say that I think the reason I quote unquote hate true crime is because when you're telling these stories, sometimes it's hard for me not to go, it's like this, like her parents are still alive. Like these are real people. Like that's
totally.
Just,
and that's the hard thing is it's like,
and obviously we're both very respectful to.
Well, and I think, you know, from the beginning of time, there has been a fascination with darkness. There is that there's no denying that that human brains like are obviously some of us are formed to be fascinated by this stuff, but it doesn't mean that we support or love, you know, killing or murder or all of that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, true crime is more than just that, right? It's the psychology behind it. It's what the authorities can do and how they can measure DNA and all that. It's not just the killing.
Exactly. And which is why I don't focus a lot of the attention on the killing, which I'm not saying it's bad to focus the attention on the killing because that is a fascination as well. But for me, it's more the psychology, which is why we focus on the psychology. But my just thing is, I hope after you guys listen to these stories that you keep positive energy, that you tell your loved ones you love them, that you understand that these are real life stories and that this is horrible things. And for me, whether you pray, you meditate, whatever it is you do, keep these people in your thoughts and prayers. Like we tell these stories to spread awareness. So now tonight, use it as a positive force. You know what I'm saying?
No, I agree. And just again, we wanted to say thank you to everyone who's listening and everyone who's subscribing and leaving reviews. We read all the reviews. We love them. It really does make Peyton and me extremely, yeah. extremely happy. Yeah. It really does.
I keep going because of the people, because of you guys. I literally do it straight up just because I love this community uh-huh. that we have, and I enjoy doing it with you guys.
And hopefully we can keep growing it.
Totally. And that's the story of Jody Sanderholm. All the images will be on our social media. If you want to follow us on there, it's Murder with My Husband. And we will see you guys next week. I love it.
And I hate it.
Goodbye.